CliffCentral.com.
All right, all right, all right, all right, all right. Oh, man. I feel like such an idiot. I am. I have no idea. I know. I have no idea what happened. I overslept, and this hasn't happened for the longest time, Pums. I feel like such a moron. How are you? What's been happening? Morning, morning, morning. I actually overslept. I didn't hear my alarm. I didn't hear anything. It's ridiculous.
No.
Yeah, ridiculous. And I think I've had a really busy week, which is good. I'm not complaining about it. I love being busy. But I seriously just overslept. Like I haven't done in, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. It's crazy. How are you?
That is a serious, like, it's one of those fears that I have about Thursday mornings. And I have had a situation before where it was like a Tuesday and I woke up thinking it's Thursday and completely freaked out.
Oh, yeah.
So I go to bed early. I go to bed early on Thursday, on Wednesdays, just to make absolutely sure that I'm like,
No,
it's too freaky.
It's not just a fear of mine. It's like the worst fear of mine. And then on weekends sometimes, like I wake up on a Saturday sometimes and go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's 7 o'clock. I've missed the whole show. And I feel like such a moron now. Like, oh God, hang on, it's Saturday. So it hasn't happened in ages. But so,
I drove into the office, as you can see, this morning.
Yes.
And it was raining. It was raining.
What?
When I was driving here. I know. I'm absolutely irritated because it then means it's going to be a very cold day and possibly a very cold weekend, guys. It was raining. Wipers, everything. The whole...
No, I know.
Might also be because I finally had my car washed.
That's usually why it rains. It's either because you washed your car because you've got something on that you can't that you really hope there won't be rain for, like an event or something which you've planned meticulously. It's always when there's some really important thing going on.
I am actually going to an event tonight, and I don't have the right outfit. It's a red carpet event, and I actually don't have the right outfit for this weather. What I was gonna wear. And what I don't know, I'm just gonna have to freeze it out. I'm just gonna have to arrive in my outfit and just.
Yeah. That frantic panic. So I mean, this is exactly what I was talking about just a minute ago with Tracy. She says that frantic panic when you eventually wake up and realize you've overslept. Amazing what you get done in a fraction of the time. Well, that's it. I mean, like, I literally in 2.5 minutes brushed my teeth, got dressed, like, switched everything on, connected cameras. I mean, my laptop wasn't even in this room. And I was like, dun, 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 dun. How the hell did I do that? It's crazy. Chris says, I hope you're giving us an extra 15 minutes for being late. Pay back the time. Well, all right. We'll see, Chris. We'll see about that.
Gareth can stay. This is why I'm at the office. I have a meeting directly after this.
No, don't worry. Pums, we won't keep you for a second longer.
Gareth will stay. Chris, Gareth will stay and give you extra 15 minutes.
Yeah. Listen, we've got an incredible show for you this morning. We've got so much to do, and we've got a burning platform that is going to be awesome today. So let me tell you about a couple of things going on. We have someone called Joseph Garassi who's on. He's the executive head of the school at Red Hill School. Now, we've spoken to him before. You know, I like talking to people in education because I care about education, and it's an important part of what makes South Africa either work or not work. We need to get young people as smart as possible. And this guy, he thinks out of the box, and he's doing really interesting things. They've got a festival on, and he wants to tell us about that. We also just want to talk generally about the state of education in South Africa and what the future is for kids and how you can prepare them best for that future. I know it's something you think about, Pums, all the time because you've got a son who is now at boarding school and who is growing up faster than, you know, any of us can believe. I mean, I still remember when he was a little tiny kid. Tiny. First time I met you.
Yeah, he was, person.
Yeah. He was a baby. And, you know, it's if we don't track these things, you don't even realize how quickly it's happening. It's like, for example, when you don't see someone for, you know, a couple of months and then you suddenly see them and their kid has gone from being, you know, a toddler to being like this little person. He's got a personality. They can talk. They can they're this high instead of a little bundle, you know. And you suddenly see the changes because you haven't been paying attention. And I think for parents, it's scary to see that stuff. But when they're learning things and you see how quickly those brains pick stuff up, that's when you suddenly realize, like, we actually have to watch what we teach these people, because they'll end up either turning the world into a much better place, which I think a lot of generations that have come before have wondered if they've actually done that, or if they've done more damage than good, or they'll make it a whole lot worse. And you don't want that, that's for sure. I mean, we want to grow up in a country where we can believe the next generation's got more going for it than the previous one. So we're going to speak to him just for a couple of minutes, and then we've got the Burning Platform and Mighty Jamie returns. We'll also be speaking to someone called Nastasia Arensa, who is a business news anchor at the SABC. And I've been wanting to talk generally about the economy for a very, very long time, and we thought, why not get someone on who does this every day, who can give us, again, you know, we don't see the day-to-day growth, but if you're paying attention over the long term, you see some big changes and you see some big indicators. And I think it's time we looked at that, how markets are moving, what investors are thinking, and general economics in South Africa. You know, we all talk about things like the interest rate and inflation and petrol price, but we need to actually unpack these ideas and get to the bottom of it. So I'm hoping that we can get to all of that and a whole lot more this morning. Let us know what you're up to. Drop us a comment in the comments section. We want to hear from you. And be sure to like and subscribe. Otherwise, we get into trouble, you know, so we've got to talk about that. Just quickly, because I've been beating this drum forever, here is an interesting thing from the CDC, who were, of course, the people who in America led the charge for lockdowns. And they've published this, which I'm sure they didn't want to publish, but it's interesting, right? Because we've been saying this for the longest time. So they've compared countries with mandatory stay-at-home orders versus no stay-at-home orders. And they've combined all the cumulative COVID-19 cases per 100,000 people. That's on CDC data from April 2020 through to June 2021. And guess what? No difference. No difference. It's pretty much exactly the same. So this is what we were saying. You can now definitively say that COVID-19 would have affected us exactly the same way, whether the government of your country or the mayor of your town or the politicians in your area had lockdown or had not. But the big problem here is, obviously, if you compare all the details of everything else, like jobs, like people's relationships, like the way we behave towards each other. Everything else, disaster in the lockdown areas, not such a disaster in the non-lockdown areas. So there it is. After, 2.5 years, we can now definitively say this was an absolute unmitigated mistake. And the people responsible, I reckon, they should pay the price. Pay back the money. They can't do that. They can't give us back our jobs. They can't recreate the economy in the wake of their bad decisions, so they must go to jail. I'd like to see some politicians pay the price, at least at the polls, and at best actually go to jail. I mean, Boris has already paid the price, right? He's gone. So now who do you think should
they're
be next?
They're falling like dominoes there in Europe.
I want to see
falling like dominoes.
Who do you think should be next? I mean, who would you like to see go? Because this is an opportunity for us to get rid of politicians we don't like. And the ones who made those decisions are usually the ones we don't like. I think you know that Trudeau is going to pay a price in Canada. I think that Jacinda Ardern is going to pay a price in New Zealand. I think a lot of these people are going to fall.
Do you know what I woke up to this morning?
Tell me.
Another invasion of a... Are we having the political conversations? I'm trying to find it now. I think in Bangladesh.
Oh, yeah.
They stormed the parliamentary building.
Yay. Because that's what they did in Sri Lanka just a little while ago.
This is insane. It's becoming a trend.
Well, it's a good trend. And Cyril better, you know, he better start worrying about not only Pala Pala Game Farm, but all his other properties. He really
listen,
should.
Last night they had the ANC in Gauteng. Mm-hmm. had, because this weekend is the policy conference. So yes. Last night they had a presidential dinner at NASREC. There were like 5 people protesting outside. And Carl Niehaus wasn't even one of them.
Who were they? I mean, they're like the world's cheapest hire crowd.
They were just like 5 people with, and apparently they're ANC members and employees. That's what it said.
And those 5 of the them. News. They could scrape together
Flash
5 of them.
Baghdad. That's where I knew it had a B. I was looking. It's at BBC News.
So in
BBC
Iraq.
News in Iraq.
Okay, well, that's hardly, you know, like
Muqtada al-Sadr supporters in Baghdad storm Parliament building.
Well, Iraq is no stable Mabel. Let's just put it that way. And for a while now, Iraq has been like the delinquent child.
I'm going to send this to you. I mean, the pictures look just like Sri Lanka. They're all over. There's so many. Hundreds of protesters breached a high security zone in Baghdad and broken into Iraq's parliament building.
Yeah.
Supporters of the cleric, Muqtada al-Sadr,
yes,
opposed the nomination of a rival candidate for prime minister.
Sure. Okay, so there are tangible events that are going on that can give you some indication of how politicians are in a very dodgy position. I wouldn't want to be in politics. Tell you what, I wouldn't want to be in government in any country in the world. And, you know, we often talk about like how far could you push South Africans before they say to here and no further? We're not the kind of people really who are going to do massive revolutionary things. I don't think South Africans are like that. You could push us and push us and push us. We don't like take up arms and, you know, storm the president's house or the union buildings, but we do get pissed off and we withhold our money and we stop participating in the elections, which has started long ago, right? The elections are just not a thing for such a huge proportion of South Africans at the moment that to even get them back there, to make them participate again in democracy is going to be a big ask. And remember, this is a country where people paid a huge price for that. Just shows you how annoyed they must be, how completely disillusioned they are. And I think that people are also in a position where there's not a whole lot they can do. Like, you know, if you're hungry and you don't have a job and you don't have any means of getting from A to B, and we're such a big country with vast distances between places, the poorest of South Africa's people probably live in circumstances which don't allow them to like get up, take up arms and revolt in any enormous way. That's why there are only 5 people at the ANC thing in NASREC protesting. People can't afford to get there.
I wonder who organized it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things
it was so scant. It was literally like 5 people with little posters.
We can get into the details. I'm sure Jamie has some things to say about that too in the Burning Platform. And we've got to also, I put this on the agenda too, Pums, is we've got to talk about Dudu Mieni. I mean, that was quite a big story.
I saw that last night.
Did you see that? Yeah. Yesterday.
Are we talking about that now? Are you talking about that in the next hour?
I mean, we can breeze through it now, but we'll get into it properly. What your top line thinking on that?
I was so pissed off. I really am, because I think it just shows the level of impunity with which our system treats whistleblowers. And this in the week when all the news is coming out about Babita Nwokora. You'll remember her. She was a whistleblower and she got killed. It's just 120,000 rand and all. Mm-hmm. Like 120,000 rand. That's it. Just write a check and they will forget. But she named this guy and his life is in danger. And there's so many people who were whistleblowers in the Zondo Commission and their lives are in danger. And there's no, we really need to protect whistleblowers more. If we're going to get over the issue of...
Well, there's no...
Over the issue of...
I mean, the incentives are perverse, right? To do the right thing makes you very unpopular with some very dangerous people in South Africa. You also don't, if you don't participate in the crime, you don't have any money. So, and no one's going to pay you for that. So there's no incentive for you materially to do it, except like doing the right thing, which, I mean, in an ideal world, and you know, if you ask someone who's idealistic, what do you need to do for a whistleblower? They'll say, well, the whistleblower should come forward because they want to do the right thing. And then what? They want to live the rest of their life in essentially witness protection? I mean, not that we even have that, because if you go into witness protection in this country, there's no such thing. People will find you anyway. And the people who you've outed and you've revealed to be crooks, these are not great people. We know that there are political assassinations carried out in this country. We know how dangerous it can get. And when you cut off...
Besides physically killing people, there are many ways to kind of victimize people following that. And we know it happened in Eskom. Some of those whistleblowers that came out, they got completely victimized. They got hounded out of the organization. Nobody will hire them. So people say they should do the right thing. But now that they have done the right thing, they have no jobs. They have no income. Some have lost houses. In today's Daily Maverick, when I woke up this morning and looked at the headlines, the Daily Maverick is also running, and I think Daily Maverick is also running an article about coming out of the Zondo Commission, and we've spoken about this before, Price's legacy. It's called Price's Legacy of Whistleblower Victimization and Corruption Cover-Up.
Right.
Is off the rails. You know, that's what happens. So people come out, people do the right thing, people oppose the corruption, people speak out about it, and then they get victimized and they get suspended and they lose their jobs. Even private sector won't hire them. Private sector won't hire them because remember we spoke about this and I said private sector also keeps the ANC in power. They won't hire.
They do.
Those individuals because they have decided that they cannot afford to hire those individuals because it might jeopardize contracts that they have with the government.
Yeah. And government is the biggest player in the economy. So unless you have a small business and you just exclude, you decide, all right, well, whatever business we do, we'll exclude government, which I think a lot of businesses can't afford to do, but probably, you know, government won't work with them anyway. So they have to make it, piece it together in any case. But I mean, how else are you meant to work? So the system is
what pissed me off about Dudumeni's 120,000 rand. So yeah, I'll just plead guilty and I'll negotiate.
In other words, she wasn't taking responsibility for anything. She was just taking the easiest way out. She obviously had legal advice and someone said, this is what you have to do. That just, it annoys me because there isn't any, like, it doesn't feel like karma has paid her a visit, you know, for all the things that she's done. She's still on top and rotten and bad for everything around her. And yet she gets away with it. I mean, we see these stories. It's just, it's frustrating beyond belief. So,
and then she wants to complain. So she gets the, she pleads guilty. The case is over. She gets the 120,000 rand fine. Yeah. And then she pleads poverty. 120,000. Oh no, I can't afford that.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
then she must go to jail.
Absolutely. That's what happens if you can't afford the fines. There's jail or a fine. That's why they give you the option.
But why must it be an option? This is all I'm saying is I don't want an option. I don't want people to pay back the money. I want people to go to jail and pay back the money.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Right. Well,
Brian Molefe is currently not paying back the Eskom pension fund. You know, he owes, and also court case, and he lost. He must pay back the 10 million he got from the Eskom pension fund. He hasn't paid back a cent, pleading poverty. He must go to jail.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree with that. I can't, it's outrageous that someone who's been put through the whole system, been found to have been guilty, he's given testimony where he's had to give testimony. We know what he's guilty of. We even know the amounts involved, and he's doing nothing about it. and nothing has been done to him about it. So go to jail. See these people in orange overalls, and it might give the right message to all the ones who are thinking about doing the same stuff. That's where we've got to go. All right, so I want to get to some headlines in a moment, and we'll do that in just a short while. There's plenty to talk about, but I do want to quickly tell you about this, because there are a lot of people who this will affect. Do you need insurance, but you hate having to make that phone call? I'm sure you do. Well, with Naked, you can get a final car and home insurance quote online in just 90 seconds. You don't have to have a phone. You don't have to be calling a call center. You don't have to wait on hold. You don't have to read all your details to someone on the other side, and they're not going to hear which letter you said, and they're going to spell your name wrong. The price you see on the website or the app is the final and the best price they can offer. So you don't have to phone them, try to negotiate a better price. You don't have to speak to anyone at all if you don't like that. And I mean, who likes talking to people in a world where you can actually just do things online or by message or by email? And really, this is the best way to do it. You simply enter your card details on the Naked app and you are good to go. It's that easy.
Oh, I'm going to try that out today. I'm shopping for new car insurance.
Well, this is the best way to do it. You can basically cover your car or your home in 3 minutes, Pumi, all online. Naked will even help you to cancel your existing cover if you've got existing cover. So if you don't like the price or you decide not to buy cover from Naked, no one will call you back for months to convince you otherwise. To me, that's like the sweetener. If you're going to deal with anyone and they don't bother you for months and months afterwards, calling you every week trying to get you to buy something you didn't want to buy, I am a fan of that. So if you want to get hold of them, visit naked.insure. That's naked.insure, or you can download the Naked Insurance app to sort out your insurance without a phone call. Naked.insure, and you can get hold of them. We've been dealing with them for a long time. In fact, both Rena and I had our cars insured with Naked, and they're terrific. That's all I can say. So get on there, naked.insure, and find out. Without a phone call, you can get all of the information. You can get it right there. Naked Financial Technology is an authorized FSP. That's a financial service provider. Naked Financial Technology, an authorized financial services provider. Go to naked.insure to find out more. You'll be glad that you did.
I'll tell you all about it next week.
Excellent. Excellent. I like
tell you about my experience.
There's a follow-up. That's great. So listen, you are one of these people who pays attention to people who I should be paying more attention to. And the person who immediately comes to mind is Martha Stewart. Now, you remember she went – Martha Stewart's interesting, man. I mean, this woman is – she's like a billionaire. She did all of this by making housekeeping – home, you know, what do they call it? Homemaker stuff. Being a, I shudder to say the word housewife because I sometimes think with the amount of time I spend tidying up and sorting things out around the house, amount of stuff I watch on YouTube and Instagram or whatever else about the good housekeeping, that's Martha Stewart stuff. So, I mean, maybe I'm probably a housewife in some people's definition. So
could be a billionaire.
I love this woman. I think she's amazing. Like she's brought about this industry which has made her extremely rich, but then she did also go to jail. So she's got like this cool edge. She and Snoop Dogg are very good friends.
And she's best friends with Snoop Dogg.
I know. Like best friends. The two of them talk all the time. And she's this like white lady from suburbia who has figured out how to organize your kitchen better. And Snoop Dogg is probably one of the coolest people in the whole world. And they get on like a house on fire. So when I hear Martha Stewart, I'm always curious. And she's in the news again.
Except last week was a little bit sad. Last week was a little bit sad because one of the things that Martha Stewart has in her backyard are peacocks. And they were attacked. they were attacked. Peacocks and pea hen were attacked by a coyote because, you know, this is a problem that they have in America, like wildlife of that nature. And she put out an Instagram post about it, about her mourning. But the thing about it was so weird because in the back, you know how in your Instagram you can have music? She had Marvin Gaye Let's get it on.
Oh, shame.
Which kind of made me think.
Wow. Listen, I feel sorry for her. Obviously, these were her pets, right? And you don't want anyone to lose their pet, because it's very, very heartbreaking. And for some people, their pets are their children. And Martha Stewart obviously really cared about this peacock. She's got two of them, right?
I think there were five of them. No, I think five. It wasn't. Yeah, she had quite a number. And there were five of them that were attacked. Six pet friends. And they were attacked in broad daylight.
Oh, my God. By a coyote, which is what, like a little like coyote. Fox wolf type North American canine. Anyway, so this poor woman, she announces this on the internet, but she announces it with Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On"
Marvin Gaye playing in the background, which got me thinking about the ways in which we mourn, right? So, like, because that is what it's about for her. She's mourning. It's her beloved pet. They've been eaten. They've been savaged. In the backyard, in their own home. And, you know, maybe she just needed the sultry, soulful sounds of right. Brother Marvin, you know, to keep her like...
I you know what I was listening to yesterday? I was driving back from a dinner and I asked Siri to play me a soul playlist. And man, were there some good songs. So for about, I don't know, 50, the 15-minute journey that it took me, I was listening to some great music, you know, where you just needed, you know, everybody goes through a stage where, because I listen to podcasts and, you know, sometimes I run out of podcasts because my playlist ends, which is rare, but it happens. It's like, for example, you know, those days where you actually get your whole to-do list done. You're like, you can't even believe it. You go, oh my God, I've ticked off everything on my to-do list, because there's usually always something that waits till the next day. Anyway, the funniest thing is...
But they were making fun of her about that. And I didn't think that she needed to be about her Marvin Gaye, that it's such a bizarre song choice to make this announcement. And I was thinking, but it's like soothing music. Maybe that's what she needed. She needed like...
That's maybe the stuff. Yeah, that's the stuff that she needs to feed her soul with. Marvin Gaye. Nothing wrong with that. And people do mourn in different ways, Pumi. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you've got a pet that's unusual. Like keeping five peacocks is it's a strange thing to do. She has probably got a lot of space. I mean, she lives out in like upstate New York.
She does live in like a mini, it's not a ranch, full-on ranch, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
Got lots of space.
It's a big property.
Lots of space for peacocks to be strutting around.
All right. And you mentioned Carl Niehaus earlier. And, you know, we've talked about what a sad individual he is and just how, like, outrageous his claims are and how he'll do anything to just feel relevant in an ANC, which is increasingly becoming, like, a ridiculous party to belong to. It's just becoming ridiculous. There's no other way to put it. But apparently he's back in the news. You said he wasn't at that little protest with the five people, but he is in the news anyway.
Yesterday. No. He wasn't in yesterday's one, but he was at the Durban one. He had organized a protest in Durban on Sunday for the closing of the KZN conference.
Yeah.
And obviously because KZN conference, you know, the president has to close the conference. And there was lots of talk about whether he would actually show up.
He didn't.
To which he did. He did.
Oh,
he did?
He did
show up.
No, I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he avoided.
He did arrive.
Okay.
No. He did arrive and he did do the closing comments. There was a little bit of a hurly-burly up front with, you know, Wenzenu Zuma. But they calmed down and they let him speak. And he carried on to speak for 45 minutes.
Shame. Shame, shame, shame. Hey, at least when you say they allowed, he just forces his way in. Some people don't ask for permission.
He's not forcing his way in. He is the president of their party.
No, I'm talking about Carl. I'm talking about Carl Niehaus. Like, he forces his way into things, yeah.
No, Carl was outside.
Shame.
Carl was outside. He was with his protest. He had organized a protest. And it was a sizable protest outside that Olive Center, conference center. Unlike yesterday's one.
Oh,
they needed Carl yesterday to organize yesterday's one.
I just want to go back to the peacocks for a second, because Tabo says, aren't peacocks dumb? I'd rather have koi fish. Well, I mean, both are not my idea of a perfect pet by any means. If you're going to have pets, like, try to have something that actually is, first of all, mammal is usually a good place to start, because at least
what makes koi smarter than peacocks?
I don't think they are. I don't think koi. So someone, the reason this came up is Lebang was saying she's just moved into a new house and there's this koi pond with a whole bunch of fish in it, and they need a lot of care and maintenance. And it's like having another kid on the balance sheet in terms of costs. So she's trying to get rid of them, and she made a not so disguised attempt to sell her koi fish on the show on Tuesday. So Lebang was getting rid of her koi, and we got into a conversation because some people who listen to us obviously have koi fish, and they said they're quite smart, that apparently they will come when you feed them, and they start to respond to the sound of their owner's voice, which I'm not sure if I believe it because I've never seen it for myself, but why would I doubt that someone who owns koi would lie about that? I mean, there's a reason to have these things, right? So, and I find any fish bigger than that, bigger than like the length of your pinky finger, anything longer than that, I find those fish pretty creepy and weird. And I don't like the idea. Like, do you know these people who will put their toe in the water and then these fish will come and like suck on your toe? It's disgusting to me. It's like,
yeah, there's a massage. You can actually
get
you pay for that.
Yes. Don't like it.
They eat the dead skin off your feet.
No, thank you. So I don't like any fish bigger than that. So I have this, I'm starting off from a very negative place with fish. And I can't believe that any of them, you know, they always say like a memory of a goldfish, because the goldfish will go around its bowl once and it'll be like, ooh, look, something new. Ooh, look,
that's
something
called
new.
A twit.
Ooh, look, something new. Yeah. So I'm not a big believer in fish intelligence. I may be wrong. I may be completely wrong. I'm willing to be corrected. But those are not pets that I'd be interested in keeping.
How's Alice?
Oh, Alice.
It's time for the headlights.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Let's get into it. We really are getting distracted this morning.
I'm going to stop distracting you.
It's because I woke up late. Sorry. It's my fault, not yours. All right, so let's start off with gaming time has no link with levels of well-being. So, you know, they're always trying to prove that gaming, whether it's online or one of these computer games that you can play on your own or whatever. They've studied 39,000 video gamers. They're always trying to prove that either these things are terrible for you or they're really good for you. The answer is probably somewhere in between. So they've done this study, 39,000 video gamers. They found little to no evidence that time spent playing affects people's well-being. The average player would have to play for 10 hours more than usual per day to notice any difference, it found. And the reasons for playing were far more likely to have an impact. Well-being is measured by asking about life satisfaction and levels of emotions like happiness, sadness, anger, and frustration. So these results contradict a study, as I said, in 2020, conducted by the same department at the Oxford Internet Institute, but with a smaller group of players. The 2020 study had suggested that those who played for longer were happier. Common sense says that if you have more free time to play video games, you're probably a happier person. That was from the professor Andrew Prisbilski, who had worked on both studies. But contrary to what we might think about games being good or bad for us, we found in this latest study pretty conclusive evidence that how much you play actually has no bearing whatsoever on changes in well-being. Now, what do you think of that?
So years ago, I read a book called Reality is Broken and I'm trying to find it on my Kindle library here, Jane McGonigal.
Okay.
And Why Games Make Us Better and How They Can Change the World. And it was all about gaming and how gaming kind of works in the brain, for the gamer, for people around, and how the world can actually become a better place if more people were, how we could hack some of the things that the world kind of, we have to do every day with game.
Right.
It is an incredibly fascinating book. I think to also, if you don't have the patience to read a full book, I think there's also a TED Talk.
Hmm.
Her name is Jane McGonigal.
Okay.
And it's called Reality is Broken. And this is years ago, probably about 10 years ago that I read this book. And to this day, you know, she talks also about the history of games. So not just gaming as in video games, but also just sports and all, because those are also just games, right?
Right, absolutely.
And all of those things and how it helps you hack your brain.
Well, okay, they talk a little bit in the study about mental health. And I think maybe we could just dwell on this for a little bit because it's something a lot of people are fascinated by, including me. So in China, kids are only allowed to play for 1 hour per day on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. But many gamers around the world say that their playing helps their mental health. This is what you're talking about, hacking your brain, right? Mike Daly, who created Lemmings and Grand Theft Auto, said the benefits are varied. He said, I'm not sure it's something that's measurable with a single well-being state. He said, as in everything in life, it's a balance. If you spend 24 hours a day playing, it's not good. But you spend 24 hours a day eating or working out, that's also not good. I mean, anything for you in excess is not good. You know, people always go, well, water is so good for you. You drink a lot of water. You can, there are people who've had too much water to drink, and it can actually make you very sick. So everything in excess is a problem. And I wonder what Joseph will say when we come to him just now from Red Hill, because he's dealing with kids all the time. I'm sure that gaming is a big part of a lot of young people's lives now. It's like something people do.
And the whole, you know, and the whole thing, Jane's entire premise was also based on the fact that gaming is a lot like life. You don't really have a rule book like life. You know, you kind of have to figure it out as you go. Mm-hmm. And it's got little rewards, which, again, ping in your brain with a little bit of serotonin every now and again. And all of those reward parts throughout the game. And also, you lose some, you know? Mm. So it's got lots of, very similar to how life is. It's got challenges and it's got rewards and it's got, and so it,
would you say that
it's the same sides of your brain as kind of living through your every day?
Would you rather have your son playing games for 3 hours a day or scrolling through social media for 3 hours a day? Which one do you think is worse for people's well-being and mental health? Or do you think it doesn't matter?
Definitely scrolling through social media.
Is worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a big gamer. He's big into gaming. Mm-hmm. And obviously through the lockdown, this was also the only way that they could, he and his friends could connect with each other, because when they're all connected onto the internet, they get to talk to each other and they all get to play the same game. You know, these multiplayer universes that they're in. So that was good for him. But he is also likes going outside. So he knows how to shut down the game and go and play outside.
Well, again, balance. You can't be in front of a screen all day. But if you know that, okay, 3 hours is enough, I'll go outside, get some air, do some things, eat some food, talk to another human being in the real world, and then play another hour. Then I think you're okay. And it's hard to figure these things. As you say, there are no rules. There's no guidebook to this. So you have to figure it out yourself. Anyway, Dig Bick, which I love the name here. Gaming allows for good storytelling and lessons when you play the right games. And Ethan agrees, games are brilliant. Mm. And then Vutzako says, yes, Reality is Broken by McGonagall is a TED Talk. You can check it out. Very good. All right. It's time for us to speak to Joseph Garassi, who is the executive head of school at Red Hill. We've spoken to Joseph before, and I always like talking to people who are in education. They give us a little bit of insight into what the next generation may be learning, how much better than us, how much more well-prepared for a future they're going to be, how much more they understand about what the future could be than we did. You know, education's always changing, and the people who are at the forefront of this are the people developing the next big thing. We'll talk to him also about the Red Hill Festival, which is happening, and we're going to find out about that too. But it's a great pleasure to welcome Joseph Garassi back. Hey, Joseph, how are you?
Gareth, I'm really, really well. Thanks for having me on.
It's nice to see you. And as I said to Pumi earlier, your responsibility of having to look after so many of our children and raise them as well as possible and teach them the right things. Because let's face it, schools these days are in very many of the circumstances stand-in parents, even if it's just for a few hours a day or sometimes a little bit more. And I wouldn't want that responsibility. So are you keeping your head on your shoulders? Are you keeping a smile on your face? And is it getting easier or harder?
You know, Gareth, I think because I'm the kind of head, you know, I've always been really, really involved with the students at the school, right? Whether I direct the school musical, whether I coach swimming, but most importantly, I teach a course on identity formation. And that keeps me in touch with the students in terms of talking them through the issues that they're having to deal with today in the world that they're having to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it keeps me in touch with what's going on, how they're thinking. And I find it incredibly rewarding. I don't think I would have been in this profession for, you know, probably the last 30 years if I didn't see education as being the future of young people, the future of our world. And it changes so rapidly that I spend a lot of my time researching education just so that I can be on top of things. And I think, yeah, you know, that's probably what gives us a little bit of the edge. We are always thinking one step ahead. What's happening overseas? What's happening in the Nordic countries? What's going on in Scandinavia? What's going on in Singapore? Mm. And are we at the forefront of education? So it keeps me on my toes. Well, but again, as you know, we have to deal with the outside world, and the outside world affects the kids.
Sure.
You know, for whatever happens outside today, our kids will react to what's happening out there, and we've got to be on our toes.
Listen, we hear so many bad news stories in South Africa about education. It's always about how, you know, the Department of Basic Education have failed at this, or this minister hasn't done their job, or these textbooks weren't delivered, or these kids are learning under a tree. We don't really hear the good stories, and there are plenty of people in education who are doing the best they can and doing a terrific job. And, you know, I talk to parents some of the time, and it amazes me how much has happened and how much has changed in education from the ridiculous days when Pumi and I were at school. But it is exciting, right? And there's so much new innovation going on.
Yeah, there's huge innovation. And I will continue to say that our best schools in South Africa are amongst the best in the world. And our graduates go all over the world and are getting into the top universities all across the world. So that gives me a lot of encouragement and I feel very, very proud. So anyone who wants to kind of take away from the education system as a whole would be wrong. Mm-hmm. Our problem is, you know, and I was listening to SABC, I was listening to ENCA this morning, mm-hmm. and we're hearing again of a huge brain drain that is happening,
yeah.
and we're feeling it hugely in education. You know, where a couple of years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, you'd be able to kind of attract some really, really good teachers. That is becoming more and more difficult. And, you know, when I'm asked, I think that is going to be our biggest challenge moving forward. Can we actually get the top people back into education, and can we keep them here, and can we keep them in South Africa?
Well, I read a really horrible story just last week about how maths and science are being dropped from many schools as options because they're not popular subjects anymore. A lot of people are frightened of maths and science because they're seen as being hard. And also, it's hard for us to find the right teachers for maths and science and encourage people to do this because those are both fascinating subjects and they have unbelievable application in the real world and in life. So it's important that we have people who qualify in those subjects.
Well, there would be no education system that can call itself an education system if it doesn't have math and science in the curriculum.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, what happens with our government is when anything gets too tough, we just look at dropping things. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons that at Redhill, we brought in the International Baccalaureate, you know. And people will often say to me, well, by writing an international exam, are you not being unpatriotic to South Africa? And forgive me for saying this, but I think the government's being unpatriotic to South Africa. I think the way they've allowed the education system to go is really being unpatriotic to the young people of this country. And we went for the International Baccalaureate to ensure that subjects like maths and science continue to be taught at an international level. Because if you keep on taking things out of the curriculum, yes, you'll still get good results. But how much math and how much science are you teaching if you just keep watering down the curriculum?
Yeah, I know Pumi's got some questions for you, but I do want to quickly, because this is the other reason that we wanted you on, talk about the arts festival. Redhill's got this brilliant and very popular arts festival. It's from this Friday until Sunday, and you will play host to some of the biggest names in theater, music, and the arts. This is terrific. Includes a massive outdoor festival, extensive variety of theater productions, carefully curated art exhibition, magical children's entertainment area, and the aim is to provide something for each and every family member to enjoy. So you go along, it's not like, oh, we have to watch this this play by kids who can't sing, or we have to go and see this, you know, this terrible thing that's a bit depressing, but every kid has to participate. So we try to get them involved in arts. Like, there's something here for every parent, every kid, and it'll be for all ages. So it's really, really cool.
Absolutely.
And there's an indoor coffee shop. There's a farmer's market outdoors. There's lots to do at this festival.
Yeah, this was something that I brought to Red Hill about 5 or 6 years ago. Unfortunately, we had to stop through COVID, but we're back again. And there were two reasons for this. One, Red Hill really, really believes in the arts. And we have a full-on music program that runs right from kindergarten all the way through the school. We have arts programs, drama programs. What we wanted to do was also give back to the arts community. You know how ravaged the arts community was during COVID. And we wanted to put something back into the arts. So every single one of the artists, every one of the productions are getting paid, no matter who comes to see the show, whether they have two people in the audience or full, we are paying them their full salaries to be there, to try and get young people into the theater again, to try and get practitioners back onto the stage again. We're hoping that this will give it a boost. But also, it's time for us to celebrate life again. It's time for us to get back onto the Red Hill campus. Is a beautiful campus. It really lends itself to an arts festival environment. And the festival is very similar to the National Arts Festival or to the Hilton Festival. As you said, it's 4 days. It starts tonight with an art exhibition that has been curated by Kim Lieberman. It has incredible works, and we really talk there about arts being a way of changing the world. Tomorrow we have full-on productions in the morning. Our students attend those productions, and there the directors and the actors stay behind to talk about their productions. Into the evening, full-on night market. We've got over 30 stalls, food stalls, crafts market. And then we also have some really, really talented singers who will be performing, fire pits. You know, just come and enjoy yourself. Saturday, once again, we have theater all day running here. We have 22 productions running.
Wow.
For the youngsters, we have we have the evening music festival highlighting Shekinah.
This is like you guys are taking on like Grahamstown at this stage. It sounds impressive. Awesome. Yeah,
absolutely. So that festival goes on all evening from, I think, 4:30 till 10:30 in the evening. The Sunday is a little bit more laid back. It has a picnic for parents, and we have a sing along, and we have some of the top schools coming along and playing marimbas and jazz, and so just an incredible, incredible festival. But some of the highlights, I mean, you've got people like Mike van Graan, his productions are on, Craig Morris is there, just some outstanding, outstanding people that will be at the festival.
We've almost run out of time. Pums, I know this is something close to your heart too, education and the things. I mean, maybe we must get Joseph in. We must just talk to him properly.
Must come visit.
Yeah, for a whole hour.
I'd love to.
For a whole hour, we must get you on and just talk a little bit about where things are going. And also, there's so much stuff that, you know, the kids of school today are dealing with that we never even thought about when we were at school. I want to get into some of that too. So maybe we'll get you back.
This is really cool. You must definitely come back. Also, because I was worried that you would actually look like a headmaster. So it was a little bit, there's always a little bit of PTSD when
nerves.
Talking to headmasters.
I'm very not the standard headmaster. Ask myself. In fact, my kids kind of, on the campus, if I'm walking past, they kind of yell out to me, "Bro Joe."
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Mr. Durant.
If I'd even tried Bro Joe, I would have had a red ass from a beating, which kind of school that we went to. Anyway, thank you so much, Joseph. We'll get you back on. Nice to see you.
So hold on before you go. On the day, there's a little bit of logistics that people need to know wanting to come out to Red Hill and support the festival. How do people get tickets? I know a lot of schools have moved away from having cash on campus.
Practical Pumi. You see, Pums, this is where your mothering skills come in. She's like, where do we park? Where do we get tickets? How do we know where to go?
Yeah.
Go on.
Like, if, you know, there's... The campus is big, and you know, some of you have driven past it that side in Sandton, but where's the parking? Where's the all of that kind of stuff?
Okay, so first of all, you're absolutely right. To get tickets, you get on to Red Hill Arts Festival. .co.za. We've got an incredibly interactive program on the website. And whatever production you'd like to go into, you just press book and it takes you through to our ticketing office and you'll be able to get tickets there. On every one of the days, you can park either on the campus. We do have limited parking, but behind the Morningside Shopping Center, we have our enormous field. So you could go there on Outspan, you can park there. And then we also have a shuttle service that will take you onto the campus. And then it's free entrance onto the campus, but obviously for the different shows, you'll pay. We've had specials going where really we've brought the prices down to as little as 50 Rand a production to enable youngsters and their families to all come and see the shows. But there's nothing more than 150 Rand except for the big music festival. So all of that can be done, once you're on campus.
Redhillartsfestival.co.za. I'm afraid we're out of time, but thanks, Joseph. Nice to see you. And we'll be there to watch some of these plays, some of these shows, and good luck. It sounds terrific. Very, very good. All right, it is 7 o'clock, which means it's just after 7 o'clock, actually. The Burning Platform is coming up next. We're going to be joined by two guests, Mighty Jamie, who makes a return after he and Pumi had something of an altercation last time about some of the...
It was not an altercation, it wasn't that exciting.
A bit of an argument, though. I mean, that's always good. We like an argument on the show. And Nastasia Arendse, who I'm very pleased to welcome to the show, she will be joining us in a short while. She's a business news anchor at the SABC, and she's been in the broadcast business for 13 years, having worked at CNBC Africa, Business Day TV, SAFM, and Classic FM. It's going to be a great pleasure to welcome Nastasia to the show, too. All of that and more on the way, cliffcentral.com. It is Thursday. Yeah, almost the end of the week already, and almost the end of the month. Payday, people, payday. Coming right up. cliffcentral.com.